Right, we are back and we're focusing our attention now on the question of management accounting and the role that that can play in the management of innovation projects. And it's a paper that we read by Mowitz and Hansen and Hansen about long and short translations. Right. It's important before we begin to talk about this paper to understand where Mowitz and his colleagues are coming from. Usually when we talk about management accounting, people consider it a relatively neutral affair, right? It's almost an exact science. There are processes for how you prepare management accounts. There are, the way we typically think about it, not too much to think about in that process. It's pretty obvious. Most people tend to think whether a company is making profits or not. It's pretty obvious if a product costs $5 or $10 to produce. And it's pretty obvious if a return on investment calculation exceeds or falls below the required level, right? That's how you often see research in management accounting getting done. It's about a set of objective tools that produce, you would often imagine, an accurate picture of the company, of the project, of what it is that's going on in the organization. Now, that is not how Mowitz and his colleagues are going to understand this, and it's not the way that you should understand it. Management accounting, to use a bit of a metaphor, is often seen as a camera that kind of depicts reality in a particular way. And really, the way that Mowitz and his colleagues think about it, and the way I encourage you to think about it, is that management accounting really should be thought of much more as an engine, right? Something that contributes to producing a particular kind of reality for the organization, right? It doesn't just produce a very particular image of the organization. It also produces the organization in particular ways. It turns the company into a company in a particular kind of way. You can see that perspective kind of brought out in their first section of the paper when they talk about theories of management accounting calculations. That they see as inscriptions that produce knowledge, create visibility, mediate between complementary resources, and identify objects and objectives to be managed, right? In most mainstream accounts, you would think that management accounting calculations are producing, they're producing an accurate image of what's going on, but that's not how you should understand it, at least in this account. You're going to see management accounting as an active effort to produce a particular kind of knowledge and to make it possible to manage in particular ways. If you want a deeper dive into that, I can kind of recommend the book called A Camera, Not an, an Engine, Not a Camera, How Financial Models Shape Markets by Donald McKenzie. That's sort of a very good introduction to this way of thinking. You would usually imagine that a financial model is going to be something that gives you an image of the market. Whereas in this particular way of thinking, it's going to be something that shapes the market, that makes the market work in a particular kind of way. Okay. So with that kind of, with that framing, how would you think about the connection between management accounting and innovation? And some would say that, right, Tushman, for instance, would say that it's about finding the right management tool for the job, right? When he's talking about explorative and exploitative business units and how they must be managed differently, they have to be subject to different incentive schemes. He would essentially say you need to have management tools that support that, right? You need to find the right way of measuring. You need to find the right way of accounting for innovation. But for Mowitz and his colleagues, that story is going to be much more complex, right? As they put it, management accounting rarely gets the sort of constructive role that it actually deserves to have. We're not clear about the particular constructive role that management accounting has in the innovation process, and we need to become more aware of that. Right? So how is it that they're going to make that argument? Okay, let's start just by clarifying what it is they're looking at, right? Basically, their study is empirical, and it's a look at three organizations that are all innovative. and they're all oriented towards high-tech products, right? But they work in fundamentally different ways, right? One organization, the one they call Suit Tech, is basically constantly developing tailor-made products through long-term projects with deep interaction between engineers and customers, right? The sales representatives are engineers, and so they're co-developing all these solutions. The other company, called High Tech, is in the business of developing standardized but highly advanced products, and they do that through a very intense research and development effort, right? So Suit Tech is developing tailor-made products. High Tech is developing custom product. Suit Tech is developing all these tailor-made products. High Tech is developing very advanced but also standardized products. And the third company, what they call Lean Tech, also develops standardized innovative products, but they build those products using modular solutions, and they have a strong focus on using common components designed with sort of a front-end concern about producibility, right? So you can say they're all basically doing innovation, but they're doing it in ways that are more or less explorative. And they are organizations that reflect, to some extent, Abernathy's distinction between being very fluid, constantly having this custom focus, versus being much more standardized, and that standardization kind of extends either into just the product or deeper into the standardization of components. Right? What's interesting here, of course, is that these three organizations, while all being innovative, but innovative in different ways, are also using these very different financial methods, right? They use different management accounting processes. They are controlling essentially based on different calculations, where more and more costs are recognized as part of the product, right? In Suit Tech, right, the first company, the one that's doing highly customized products, they're basically focusing on sales volume, right? So if you think about the results that a firm is producing, right, Suit Tech is going to focus on the very top line of the results, right? They're going to look just at sales volume. If you move into High Tech, they're going to look at sales minus the direct variable costs, right? Whereas in Lean Tech, they're going to be working with what's called activity-based costing, where a part of the fixed costs that the whole organization incurs are just allocated to different activities, right? So you could basically say that Suit Tech is focusing on the top line, High Tech is focusing on the line just below, and Lean Tech is focusing on the bottom line. And basically all of the three over time are going to be trending towards an increased focus on the bottom line. In both Suit Tech and High Tech, the management accountants basically want to have the focus further down, right? You want to be closer and closer to the bottom line, the actual profit that you're producing, and you want to account for more and more costs as you're finding out what a product costs, right? In that sense, the calculations that you manage with are not so much at peace, they're not stable in that sense. And each time that Moritz and his colleagues are basically interviewing a management controller, the interview seems to play out that the controller is fighting to push the attention further down, right? Suit Tech wants to focus also on direct variable costs that they're currently disregarding. High Tech wants you to focus on the indirect costs, or the cost, they basically want to have research and development parsed out onto the individual products. And in Lean Tech, there's even efforts to have capital costs, right? Those related to inventory size and depreciation of the production assets included in the key calculation, right? So this we probably shouldn't think of this in causal terms, but we should certainly think about it as particular ways of managing, making it easier or harder to justify certain strategies, right? So it's not a question necessarily that the management accounting tool leads to particular forms of innovation, but more that they sort of gently push the organization, make it easier to justify certain things and not others, right? It makes it easier to economize on different things, and economizing on more complex things is going to push you to do strategy in a particular way. Right? Now, the wrong way to understand this is to say that if you want to pursue a different strategy, you need to choose the management tool that best incentivizes the kind of activities that you want, right? You could think of this as what's sometimes called a contingency approach, which means that you kind of map out the circumstances and then you choose the solution that best fits with the particular goals that you might have. That would be how Tushman would think about organizing the individual business unit so as to be more or less explorative, right? The way that Mowatson and his colleague would probably want us to understand it is quite the opposite, right? Strategy plays out the way it does because you've chosen a given calculation as the one that you focus on centrally. Suit Tech, for instance, is able to maintain a focus on extremely high exploration and a very fluid organization of production, non-standardized production, because it's controlling the top line and doesn't systematically work to visualize the costs that that production leads to. They also don't have a very particular clear image of the development costs that are tied to the individual product. If they had, it might be difficult for them to justify working the particular kind of way that they do. It would similar, like by analogy, it would be harder for high tech to defend having their own R&D if the R&D cost was strongly controlled, right? If it was allocated to particular products, you would have to start to optimize on R&D cost, right? So it would appear more important to look for less expensive ways to develop products, right? As long as you're not held accountable for the draw that you're doing on R&D, it's very hard to economize that. It's hard to think about whether you should be doing that cheaper or whether you should seek to optimize the performance of your product, for instance. Basically, this is going to be something that's going to be of great concern to the management accounting people, right? They want people to economize on everything that's going on. But the engineers and the marketeers are basically using the opportunity afforded by the different management calculations to optimize in different ways, right? I think the way that Mowatson and his colleagues would talk about this would be to say the calculations not only calculate, but also mediate, right? They connect what's happening in each innovation project with the organization and with the goals of the organization. What's happening is not so much that the calculation is giving a more or less accurate picture of the innovation project, right? It's not that it's right or wrong to focus on sales rather than the activity-based costing. It's just that it's different. Right, you can get different images of the projects depending on the kind of calculation that you make about it. And the kind of calculation that you make is going to shape the way that you will consider that project worthwhile, economic to pursue or not. Right. They would also, I think, like us to think about the difference between the simple use of management tools, what they call short translations, and the more complex, far-reaching form of effects. Long translations. The short translations relate to what it is that makes sense in the individual project. The central calculation that you manage around will affect what seems reasonable in the individual project. It will problematize certain behaviors. It may problematize that you're doing lots of intense R&D for a product that might not have that much of a potential impact. Alternatively, it might create awareness of the particular components that you're choosing and push you to use more standardized ones. It can basically affect whether it makes sense to let an innovation project move from one stage to another, depending on the kind of management calculations that you apply, right? You can basically visualize different kinds of costs, and you can then wonder whether they would be required or not for the successful completion of the product, of the project, sorry. The complex effects are perhaps the most interesting ones, and those are the ones that occur when calculations begin to compete, or when there are multiple calculations. It becomes interesting to see all the ways, I think, that management accounting practices affect the choices that get made about innovation. There is, of course, the question of whether the choice of management accounting calculation is going to push the organization towards more exploitation when you manage more intensely on the bottom line, right? I think that's kind of the... That's the cautionary tale here, right? The more you focus on the bottom line, the more you focus on profits as opposed to sales, the more you're going to push the organization towards becoming exploitative. I do think that the more interesting thing perhaps is what happens besides that, right? Basically, the kind of management accounting that you do in Mowatson and his colleagues' account would affect how closely you interact with customers, right? We're going to come back to that lesson in future as we talk about the future of innovation management. It also affects whether you choose to invest in R&D and in absorptive capacity, right? If you accept that there is an element of investment in R&D that the effects of which cannot be predicted and which are not going to matter in the present but in the future, that kind of shapes... how you make sense of investing in R&D. And if you want to allocate the cost of R&D very specifically to particular projects, then you're going to have the problem of how do you allocate that part of R&D, which is deliberately not meant to produce results immediately, but which is meant to build up your absorptive capacity. How do you account for that investment? Right? If you think about searching for external technologies, which is also something that we will return to in your in our class on the future of innovation management, you can suddenly see that the choice of management accounting is going to shape whether the choice of management accounting technique is going to matter for when it makes sense to develop things internally versus look for them outside the borders of the organization, right? In that sense, you can kind of end up in a situation where you create an increased need for absorptive capacity through the way that you conduct your management accounting, right? It can also influence the kind of technologies that your organization decides to focus on, right? If you rely on standardized components, if you're pushed to choose between different systems, how much you prioritize them, how much you prioritize specialization or standardization across your product line. Do you choose, for instance, to focus on hardware and hardware development or software development in pushing the performance of your product? It also matters whether you're going to be trying to design your product for performance or for producibility, right? In order for something to be efficiently produced. It's also going to matter for whether you focus on producing or outsourcing its production, and thus what opportunities you create for improving the production process over time and what kind of organizational learning that you make possible, right? In that way, it also affects whether one or another approach to ambidexterity becomes more or less meaningful. So basically, in all kinds of subtle ways, management accounting is going to put the organization's innovative work into contact with different touch points in the rest of the organization. And it's going to shape the organization's implicit or explicit hypothesis about how it best creates valuable or best creates value. Is it going to be through more costly products or through lower costs? Is it going to be through niches or mass markets? Right. In this way, we can suddenly see management accounting as a contributor to many of the dynamics that we've covered so far in the course. Right. What technologies do you invest in? Which components? Which product architectures? What role do we give market orientation relative to technology orientation? How do we organize our innovation process? What projects and forms of learning does it make sense for us to invest in? I think it's sort of wondrous to have that kind of sensitivity about something which is otherwise considered so relatively neutral and mundane. And it's this kind of sensitivity to the role of management accounting that Moritz and his colleagues are trying to push us to have. Right. As you can probably sense, I am I'm a big fan of this argument. I like this paper a lot. I can be worried, though, about the apparent purity of the argument, right? It clearly shows that some strategies are linked to some particular ways of doing management accounting, and that is going to be read sort of as a recipe for how to design organizations. I sort of feel that the whole point of understanding management accounting the way the authors do is to think of management accounting as something that is also sort of unpredictable, right? And I think the presentation that we get of how management accounting technology and innovation strategies come together kind of makes that story appear more simple than it really is. It makes it seem too clear. And I think perhaps we should be more skeptical about that than what the paper gives off. There is sort of a sense of determinism that flows through the paper that you probably shouldn't expect, and that I actually don't think that Moritz and his colleagues would want you to take away from it. It should, however, be taken as an invitation to think much more deeply about what happens as you make calculations, right? As you do management accounting, what are the effects that this has, and what would be the effect of alternative ways of accounting? I think that would kind of bring that out more. We probably contributed to giving us a more nuanced and less deterministic picture, and to prevent the paper from being read as an argument that you just need to choose the right form of management accounting for your strategy. Right. With that, we're going to put this this paper on long and short translations aside, and we're going to turn to the paper by Augstorfer on this empirical phenomenon that he wants us to be aware of, namely bootlegging.